This is the 2026 17th Annual Convention of the NA Group of the Northeast Freedom Area. This is the Growing Older in Recovery Workshop.
Workshop meeting. I'm an addict. My name is James. I'd like to open a meeting up with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. A couple of announcements. You must wear your convention badge at all times. This is to recognize that you are part of the convention. This policy will be strictly enforced by convention trusted servants. Please be respectful and smoke in the designated areas. This is a must. Smoking is prohibited anywhere else on the property. Parking is free. Make sure to get your parking ticket validated at registration or the front desk. There are coffee stations throughout the convention for sale. If you have a banquet ticket, you will have priority seating. This means you enter the main speaker meeting prior to others. And we have some readings. I've asked Nick S. to read the press statement.
Thank you. Nicky.
My name's Nick. I'm an addict.
Nicky.
Press statement. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. This is to protect the membership and reputation of Narcotics Anonymous. We do not disclose last names, nor appear in the media as members of Narcotics Anonymous. No individual, inside or outside the fellowship, represents Narcotics Anonymous. If you are approached by members of the press, please direct them to the Convention Information Hospitality. They have been prepared. They have prepared press packages and will be more than willing to assist with any questions.
Thank you. I've asked Nikki W. to read the responsibility statement.
Hi, my name is Nikki W. and I'm an addict.
Hi,
responsibility statement. Our personal conduct is a direct reflection of Narcotics Anonymous. By demonstrating our personal responsibility, we create positive images of our fellowship. Our conduct is the first and last impression that the public will have of Narcotics Anonymous. If unable to conduct yourselves responsibly, you will be asked to leave. Shirts and shoes must be worn in all public areas at all times. Not everyone stays up all night. Please keep the music level in the rooms and in the halls to a minimum during the hours of 11 p.m. and 8 a.m.
Thank you.
That's Tina H. to read who's an addict.
Hi, everyone. My name's Tina. I'm an addict. Who is an addict, you may ask? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death. Thank you for letting me read.
Thank you.
I've asked Amber D. to read while we're here.
I'm an addict named Amber. Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point. Recovery is then possible.
I've asked Brett T. to read the social media statement.
Brett.
Hi, Brett.
It
used to be.
Addict named Brett.
Hi, Brett.
Social media statement. We recognize that it is common practice for members to take photos and videos at NA events and post them to social networks. We do not believe that this is a conflict of our traditions so long as that they are not made available to the general public. Please be considerate of our guiding principles and the anonymity, he said that, the guy from New York said this earlier, anonymity of others as you share your photos and videos from the NA event. For more information, please see the service pamphlet, social media, and our guiding principles. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
This is a workshop speaker meeting on the topic of growing older in recovery. And we have asked Ms. Ellen S. and Mr. Mike P. to speak, and our first speaker will be Ms. Ellen S.
My name is Ellen, and I'm an addict. So, you know, we got to choose what order we speak in, and I said, I have to go first because I'd be afraid if you share first, and I'm not going to be able to, you know, speak the same way. So I get mine out of the way, and then I can hear you without fear, right? I've had a lot of thoughts about growing older in recovery, and I think on here it says, I got a bit of a resentment. It says growing old in recovery. And I'm going to be 68 in May, and I am not old. I am aging. And I'm aging here in recovery. So I'll tell you a little bit about when I got here. I was young. I was 30. 2 weeks before my 31st birthday, somebody took me out on a date, and anyway, so, you know, when I went to outpatient treatment before I came here, and when I got here, you know, they taught us to go to two fellowships, and so I was on a fence about the fellowships, and I got a lot from both, but there was a campaign going on that summer. I got clean in April. And there was a campaign going on that was a recovery, NA rocks. NA rocks. And so I was cool with that. Like, I like that, NA rocks. I was young enough to really think, yeah, we're the shit here, right? And are you hearing me clear? Okay. So, early recovery was difficult for me. I was a crying, snotting, blubbering victim. And I was actually a victim for a very long time in recovery. But I was young. I was immature. You know, I started using when I was... I started smoking cigarettes in a bowling alley when I was 10. So that's like... I definitely got out of myself smoking those cigarettes. I thought I was so cool. So, you know, they say you're only as old as when you started using. So you couldn't have told me that at 30. I thought I'm all grown. I thought that when I was 14 and running away from home. I thought it when I was 16 and shooting dope. And I thought it when I was 30 smoking cocaine. So, you know, I did all the drugs there are to do that were out at that time. You know, I might have said no if I was already high on something else. But whatever you had, I was welcome to do it. Whatever you had, I was anxious to do it. And I just wanted more. And it didn't matter what it was. I preferred to be like liquidy. I preferred barbiturates. Dilaudid is my drug of choice. I haven't done Dilaudid or heroin since I was 16. And I've had a lot of blessings in my recovery, and I've had a lot of blessings in my using years. So I used heroin for one summer. And my last drink was my first blackout. And my first, you can't really call it a relapse. I was in treatment. I had 29 days, and I went where I lived with a man for 7 years and ultimately had his daughter. I went to see him and his new girlfriend and his friends in our house. And I said, no thanks, I don't do that anymore. No thanks, I don't do that anymore. And I left with the guy that was holding me. Now, I put drugs in my system that night, but I didn't get high. Narcotics Anonymous had ruined that for me. And that was the last time I went around people that were using. People that I had been in love with and lost. You know, home that I had purchased and lost. You know, addiction wants everything from us, right? Everything. And I was too young to know any better. Even when I got here at 30, almost one. But aging and recovery, so I'm thinking about, like, what's the obvious stuff that happens? You know, I was so beautiful and, you know, 6 foot tall in my heels and long hair, dark hair. I didn't have white hair back then. I had dark hair, you know, and I didn't know in here that I was beautiful. I thought I was not. I thought I wasn't smart enough, wasn't good enough, wasn't enough. Almost were. You are enough today. But anyhow, that's that early recovery. You know, I was beautiful and I didn't know it. And I wish today... No, I don't. You know, there were a lot of years in my recovery, maybe 40, maybe 50. I wish that I had that 30-year-old body. I don't wish that anymore because the body comes with the brains that I've gotten over the years. And I'll take the brains. I'll take the heart that I have today over the body that I had when I was 30. I went to a, you know, when I was growing up, my stepmother was very abusive. My mom was paranoid schizophrenic. My father was emotionally unavailable, and my stepfather was a raging Roman Catholic Irish alcoholic. So there was a lot going on in my head. There was a lot going on in the things that I learned growing up and the things that were said and the things that were done. And part of the reason why I was a victim for so long, because I felt justified. But where was I going with that? So, oh, I know where I was going. I had a sponsee who was getting married, and I went out. I used to always either with women, because, you know, I had that love-hate relationship with women, and I had the scary relationship with men. I dated both, and I went to... So I either, with women when I was younger, I either wanted to look like you or I wanted to be with you. And I couldn't ascertain between the two. You know what I mean? I just never really knew. But I went to a bachelorette party with a young lady that I sponsored. She was in her 30s, and all the girls were in their 30s, and all of them were gorgeous. And I was probably 50. And I realized, like, with all clarity, that I didn't want to ever be 30 again. And that I really liked where I was in my life. You know, that I didn't need to look like them. I didn't need to feel like them, and it was wonderful. You know, it was like I grew up a little bit. And so the physical stuff is apparent. Like, you know, I had my appendix out when I was 16. I had my gallbladder out when I was 38. I had, what else kind of surgery? I've had a few surgeries. And in recovery, I ruptured a disc in my 40s and had surgery for that. Real tiny laparoscopic surgery. I broke my ankle in 23, November. No, January of 23. I broke my ankle in 5 places. Bad break. We had guys come in and bring meetings to me. But it was, you know, my daughter said, Mom, you're handicapped and you're going to be handicapped for the rest of your life because of that. I was like, she didn't say that to me. She did not say that to me. 2 years ago, I had my hip replaced on the left side. So, you know, stuff happens. And when I was having that pain in my hip, I was limping. I have a high tolerance for pain. Let me tell you, it was hard to walk. And I used a cane, trust me. And my husband had bad feet, and I could not get that man to use a cane. And we've got a whole bunch of them in the house. I could not get him to use that cane to take the pressure off his feet. But that's what happens to us physically. There's other things that happen. You know, we have, you know, diabetes. I mean, just all kinds of stuff happens to us physically. Physical is the most apparent. You know, the mental, I think, is the hardest stuff. But not really. Like, when I was younger, yeah. But now that I'm older, it's like, I have said for a lot of years now that aging and recovery is the bomb. Aging and recovery is the bomb because I have the years of clean time behind me. Clean time doesn't equal recovery. I have the years of work. I mean, I started working right away. I have the years of all those steps I've done, all those early steps, and all those, you know, I did a lot of early, 1, 2, 3 in the beginning, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I had a lot of sponsors in that first couple of years, and they kept always making me start over. I don't make people start over anymore unless they really need to or want to, but... you know, those the step work of course, we all know is the way up and out, right? The step work is the way we heal. The step work is the way I stop being a victim. The step work is the way that I understood my mom's disease and my stepfather's disease, my stepmother's disease, and my father's emotional unavailability. The step work is what gave me the information to be able to accept them and love them and not be them and just love myself through the feelings that I got because of my relationships with them and outgrow that. You know, my parents are my parents and they did the best they could and it sucked sometimes. But, you know, we don't come with handbooks. I have a 36-year-old daughter. She's never seen me used. She didn't come with a handbook and I was in early recovery when I had her. So, you know, that's part of it, that early craziness. The emotional part, you know, I've always been emotional, and you know, I've always been, you know, that blabbering idiot that first year. I shouldn't call myself an idiot. I was a blabbering snot, and somebody said, if you're not crying a snot in the first year, you're not in recovery. And he probably just told me that to make me feel good, because I was crying a snot in the whole first year of my recovery, right? We'll tell anybody anything to keep them, you know, we want to keep you here. And you deserve to cry and snot, and you deserve to laugh and jump for joy. And I went to so many activities in early recovery. We went to meetings. We went out after the meetings to eat. I didn't always have money. We hung out at Double T Diner on Route 40 on the west side so many Friday and Saturday nights. And it was fun, you know. And today, you know, I go to a Friday night meeting and we hang out after the meeting and it's more fun. Because the relationships are different. You know, they're not, I'm different. I'm older and I'm seasoned and I know who people are, not just what they do. In early recovery, I knew what everybody was doing. I knew who was doing who and who was clean and who wasn't clean and who was married to who and who was married to who and messing with who. And I don't know any of that anymore. If you're sitting in a meeting, I love you. I'm glad you're here. It doesn't matter if you're high. It doesn't matter if you're sleeping with somebody's husband or wife. It doesn't. None of that is my business, right? My business is to love you because you're in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and your recovery is going to save your life, whether you have one day or 45 years. You know, and I'm coming up in April, God willing, I'll have 37. So I got here, you know, I've been here more than half of my life. More than half of my life. And I have so grown up here. You know, my relationship with my daughter today is amazing. Not only because her faith is the same as mine and she's practicing it. She smoked weed so bad and so heavy for so long. And I was so scared. And she stopped. I said to her one day, are you still smoking? She said, no. And she's just all about her faith. So I'm all about that with her. So the physical part, we know. The physical part, I look in the mirror and I do not see the body that I used to know. Very different. And I still have to love myself, you know, because it's not about my body. My brother used to say, Ellen, how much weight have you lost since the last time I saw you? My brother Sean Michael would have never done that. How much weight have you lost since the last time we talked? One day, my little brother died of an overdose a little over a year ago, and I miss him. Yeah. But I said to him that day, I am not my body. I am so not my body. And he never said anything to me about it again. So I've lost weight. You know, when I got here, I weighed 155 pounds, and now I weigh 220. I'm a big girl. I've always been a big girl. I've never been a lightweight. I weighed 130 pounds when I got divorced, every bit of 6 foot tall. Well, 5'11 was really the truth, 5'11. And people said, oh, you look so good. Like, I could really dress in a suit and heels. But I was way too skinny. I do not want to look like a runway model ever. I don't like skinny. And if you're skinny, God bless you, you know. If you're skinny and you're comfortable with skinny, that's cool. But I like hugging some. You know, I like the hug. I like to feel the person I'm holding on to. And that's just my personal preference, guys, you know. Emotional. You know, my favorite, I was talking to my husband's brother today on the way over here. And we were talking about TV shows and what we watch on TV or what we don't like to watch on TV. There's so much reality TV. And my favorite movies and my favorite things to watch are quiet and maybe a little boring and heavily emotional. Because I didn't know how to be emotional when I was young. You know, I was told, why you got piss bags under your eyes, is what my stepmother used to say. Hi, Ron. So I was never really told it's okay to cry. And then, so in here, all I did was cry. And then now, like, I feel mature emotionally. I feel like I have mature emotions and mature, you know, I can feel my feelings today. It's not always fun. It's not always fun, because some of them don't feel good at all. But I can feel them, you know, and I can walk through them, and I'm okay with emotions. I'm okay when I'm deeply saddened. I'm okay when I'm a basket case because something happened. I'm okay. And my brother Sean is the one who said to me one time, you know, all my siblings were in the program. Most of them are gone now. And Sean used to say to me, the cool thing about when I hear you share is that no matter what you're going through, you always let us know that you know. We can tell. You don't even have to say it, but we know that you're going to get through it. And that's the gift that we get here. That's the freedom of recovery. That's the gift that when I'm walking through probably the most painful thing I've ever experienced in my life, I know I'm going to be okay. I know my higher power has a plan for me. So what are the others? So the physical aspect, the emotional aspect, the mental aspect. So I don't remember things. You know, I'll be looking for my glasses or on my face, or I'll be talking on the phone, looking for my phone. I'll go in the kitchen and say, why did I go in there? And look around and I can't remember. You know, I'll misplace stuff all the time. Misplaced, you know. I went to my home group. My home group's on a Thursday night, and it's 4 minutes from my house, and the pastor to the church is also about 3 minutes from the home group, and I have the key to the home group, and I'm about to have a conversation with my home group members because I do a whole lot in my home group. I'm very active in service. I'm very active in my home group. I'm very active in area, and I'm active in region, and I like it. You know, I'm retired. I retired in November 23. I like it. So that mental aspect of knowing how to use a computer, knowing how to speak properly. I worked in corporate America. I worked in IT department. So it doesn't make me better or worse or less or more than anybody. It just means that I have the language to say what I mean what I say, and not say it mean. And I also am able to say, is it necessary? Is it honest and is it kind before I say it? You know, I've learned that. And I don't always do it perfectly because, you know, there's a 10th step around for a reason. And I work a 10th step really well. I don't know. I think, you know, like my husband and I had a conversation a little over a week ago about all is right with our souls, right? I'm okay if I go. And trust me, I need at least 20 more years because my grandchildren are 16 and 20. And I want to see them fall in love. And I want to see them, you know, find a position that makes them happy. I want to see my daughter fall in love. She's been a single mom the entire time she's had her children. She had two babies with two men that she had relationships with. And when they ended, she spent her life raising her children. And everywhere she went, her children went. And she never brought men home. And I just would like to see her really fall in love and have what I just had. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what else to say about aging and recovery. You know, I love it. I don't mind aging at all. I don't like the wrinkles. You know, I haven't done anything to my body. And spent a lot of money on creams and stuff. But my grandmother died when she was 86, and she was wrinkled as all get up. And I take after my father's mom. I take after my father's side. My mother didn't have hardly, she didn't have near the amount of gray hair I have. My white hair comes from my dad's side, and so do my wrinkles. And so today, when I look in the mirror, I see them. You know, I remember my mom telling me when she was in her 60s, she said, Ellen, I look in the mirror, And I don't feel like the person looking back at me. You know, she felt younger. And sometimes I experience that, but mostly it's like, I'm doing all right for 60, almost 8 years old. You know, I'm doing okay over here. And the thing is that I love myself today. Somebody said earlier about self-love and self-acceptance, and you know, they initially thought that was so narcissistic. I did not know how to love myself. And I always thought, you know, I fell in love so many times, like I could really love another person better than I could love myself. But the truth was, until I really loved myself, did I love another person at that amazing level. So I want to tell you all that the other thing that happens in aging, in recovery, is that we lose people. So I've lost four parents. My brother Michael was my only knight in shining armor until about 2 years ago. And he passed in 2017. My sister Mary committed suicide when I had 8 years clean. My nephew died when he was 25 years old to a gunshot to his head in front of my sister. You know, I've lost people. I've sponsored women that died from cancer and overdoses. My brother Sean died from an overdose, and my sister Debbie is still out there using. And the only time I talk to her is when she's looking for a $20 bill. And the last time I spoke to her, she got me. She really got me. I gave her $40 on two. I gave her $20 on two separate occasions, and then when she called me for the next $20, I said, "No, baby, I'm not giving you another dime." But you know, and I miss her, and I pray for her all the time. But losing people, you know, people that I've met in recovery, people that are dying because they're older, people that are dying, I mean, we're aging, so we're losing people. And I remember being younger and watching, you know, my grandparents missing their friends that were dying because they were aging. And they were losing the people they were close to, and their life was getting thinner and thinner with the people that were in it. Are we so blessed to have Narcotics Anonymous? We will never, ever be alone, no matter how many people we lose. And on a Monday night, February 17th, my husband had a heart attack, and he died. And we got married in the church on February 14th, a year ago. We just celebrated a year, 1 year anniversary, and we actually had a legal wedding with everybody there, and it was the hottest day in the world ever, the day we got married at Susquehanna Park. On July 12th. So we've been married 7 months, and but we celebrated our year on Valentine's Day. And we had a lovely dinner. We both went to separate meetings. I came home, and he was a great cook. I came home, and he was cooking dinner, and we ate dinner together, and we watched TV together. We took a shower together, because we were like teenage newlyweds. We truly were. We took a shower together, and we went to go to bed. And he said, "I feel dizzy." And I said, "Just lay down on a bed, you know." And he did. And he died. And I had to do chest compressions for 10 minutes, and I knew he wasn't coming back. You know, they got there, and 12 people came in the house to work on him. And, you know, he really loved, maybe this isn't appropriate, but he really loved Jesus. So I know where he is. You know, I believe I'm joyful for him. I'm joyful for him. And I don't feel sorry for myself. I feel ever so grateful for the 27 months that I had from the moment I met him and started talking to him. And I just, you know, I am very, very sad. But I also know that life goes on. And I'm going to be sad, and I'm okay with it. I've had messages. I had a message from my brother, if you believe in that, telling me they were together. And I had a message from him. He made me make a mess in the kitchen the other day. He was messy in the kitchen, and I am not. And I spilled tapioca all over a trash can in the floor. And I said, okay. It made me laugh. So, you know, I experience joy when I have it, when it's in front of me, and when it feels like that in my heart. And I let myself cry when I have to cry. And a friend of mine celebrated 31 years Tuesday night, and he opened a meeting with a moment of silence for a friend who had just passed, and I just lost it. I mean, I lost it. And there probably wasn't too many of the people that knew him. There weren't too many dry eyes in the room. But, you know, that's how life happens, right? So I just keep doing what I'm doing. I go to meetings all the time. I'm retired. I can. The other blessing that is in was with, and it's, he has a dog. We have a dog that is, she'll be 14 on Mother's Day. And he was so terrified of losing her because he had her since she was a pup. He was homeless with her. They kept each other warm in the winter with no heat and no housing. And he was devastated to think about her going. Now he doesn't have to watch her go because I will be there. And, thank you so much. I hope I made sense. And I love you.
Thank you, Ms. Ellen. Thank you for your service. Our next speaker, Mr. Mike P.
Hello.
Mr. Mike?
Manatic needs Mike.
Hey, Mike.
I didn't think I was old either. I do feel old, but I got wrangled into sharing the meeting a few hours ago. Filling in for the guy I know, it's old Seamus, who's not, who must be sick or something going on. And he's definitely old. We know that. Love him. You know, and I think it's, I'm a God guy, and most everybody knows it, so God decided he wanted me to share here. For whatever reason. So when I was sharing it, I was thinking of all the things that I've been through in recovery. I mean, I'm definitely growing old in recovery because my first meeting was when I was 21 years old. It was 1988. And of course, I didn't stay clean that whole time, but that was my first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. It got brought in. Actually, I went to a meeting. Somebody somehow got me to a meeting, and I went there for a few times, got a couple key tags, didn't stick around, and, you know, proceeded to go back to using again because I wasn't done, and I was just getting out of consequences. And soon after, I ended up in rehab, 1990. And they brought some Narcotics Anonymous meetings in there. There was only like one a week, I think it was, because there really wasn't any NA meetings in the area. I was in, I'm from Carroll County, and I was in, that then it was, the rehab was in the hospital there, which has moved a long time ago. And so I went there, and then I got out, and they put me in the, in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the fellowship that was prominent in that area. And a lot of times they would say, you know, if you get, you know, people in NA weren't saying, they wouldn't stay clean. If you go to AA, you know, we know there's, it's been proven. So that was the first, that was a lie that I heard, because, you know, and I did, I went there, but I'm an addict, I'm not an alcoholic. And I don't know how else to explain that other than, I wasn't, I mean, I drank, but I wasn't the drinker to get blacked out drunk. And those people loved me, and they tried to help me as best they could, but I ended up using them over and over again. And they tried to help me so many times. And at some point, I ended up back into rehab, and then I tried, kept coming back because I had developed a lot of friends in that fellowship who are still my friends today, 30-some years later. And but I started going to Narcotics Anonymous because I identified being the addict. And, you know, I love to get high. I love to get high on drugs. My, and I want to say probably my favorite thing was acid and pot at the beginning. I loved doing those two things, and in the end, it ended up being crack cocaine. I could not put it down. And it tore everything apart. In the end, my parents that I lived with most of the time, I took everything they had. I tore everything in their house apart. I sold it all. And they still loved me as best they could. And they probably should have put some harder things down on me, but they kept taking me back in because I was their son. And, you know, and I have two brothers and a sister, and they are not addicts. And they're considerably a lot older than I am. My one brother's 10 years older. My sister's 12 years older. My other brother's 15 years older than me. So there's a big difference. And I grew up mostly, they were all married and out of the house by the time I was 12 years old. So it was like I was like the only child. And so that, you know, I'm not sure other why that I used all that time, because I came from a good family. All I know is that I wanted to be, and I really do, I kind of do know why, because I wanted to be loved. And my parents loved me, and I just wanted to be loved more and more. And I wanted to be in the life of the party. I wanted to be in the middle of everything. So I went to school, ended up being, you know, trying to be in every party there was. I would leave school to go cut and hang out with the cool kids that I thought. And in that process, I learned how to be somebody else other than Mike. And I carried that I had this mask on from an early age that I thought I was cool. And I was like the hippie guy with the long hair, and I always had pot, and I was always everybody's friend. And in the end, when I came in Narcotics Anonymous, that's kind of how it was. Like, I wanted to be everybody's friend, and I tried to emulate certain people in the program because I didn't know who I was. And just thinking about all that where I came in is just crazy to me to think about where I'm at today. It's definitely... So when I came in, I have a long story. So, like... I decided that I was going to try and stay here, and I tried every which way to stay clean without working steps in Narcotics Anonymous. None of them worked. I mean, I tried programs, relapse programs, so many different, I don't even know what you call it, different programs you would go to every day of the week, every other day of the week. I was always voted the one that was probably going to stay clean, and I was always the first one to get high. And later on, you know, and then I said, well, I'm going to come to Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm just going to stay in the meeting, and people are going to get to know me, whether they like it or not. I don't care. And so the first person that really paid attention to me was the girl in the back that had, like, the halter top on and the short shorts. And I probably paid more attention to her, but we ended up getting together. And she was 15 years older than me. And by this time, when I got in there, so I was married and had two kids by the time I ended up to stay. I decided I was going to do Narcotics Anonymous. And so you know what I did was I moved in with her. My two kids, her two kids. It was insanity. Neither one of us worked steps. I still didn't know who Mike was. It didn't work. And that was in the early 90s. And the one who got abusing in that relationship was me, because I didn't know how to deal with her. I didn't know how to deal with... Definitely didn't know how to deal with four kids. You know, my two kids, when we moved in there, were... gosh, they were 5 and 7 or something, 6 and 7 or something like that. So it was crazy. And her kids were like 12 and 13. And it was just insanity. And we were in Narcotics Anonymous. Like, she had a sponsor. And we were a part of Northwest area. And we went to meetings all the time. And we were like involved in everything. But I still really hadn't done any step work in Narcotics Anonymous. I had done step work and... Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a sponsor there before this time. When I tried it there, I stayed clean. I stayed clean there probably for about 9 months, was probably my longest time. And the sponsor I had then, we worked We did the first, I did the first three with them, and then we did, I was letting them do step four, and by the time I walked away from meeting them with step four, I did four, five, six, and was on seven. And that didn't work because, you know, I was on seven, I had to make a list. And I started making a list, and I started wanting to go back and make an amends right away. And I went back to make amends to the wrong people, at the wrong place, and ended up getting high. And so here I am in this relationship. I had no idea who Mike was, and she didn't know who she was either. And ended up being not good for me because I got lost in that relationship, and she really was trying to make me into somebody that she wanted. Now, she didn't have no control over that. She didn't really know that, and that's what was happening. And and I was, it ended up being a really bad thing that I went through. And in the end, I left her in the hospital, and I couldn't deal with the things that she was saying, because she was saying it's my fault, it's my parents' fault, it's my kids' fault, it's everybody's fault. I'm like, I didn't know what to do, so I ran. I was like, I went to go do one. And one turned into, you know, I can't stop, until the police pulled me over in the van that we had, because we had gotten married, and I think we were married a month. And I got pulled over in a van. I had NA stickers on a van, NA shirt on. I had my basic text. I was cutting my crack up on a basic text. That's where I was at. And had picked up a girl just like that. The police pulled me over, and he told the girl to hit the road. He knew who she was, and he looked at me, and I think he saw all the NA stuff, and he said, look, you need to leave and get the hell out of here and never come back down here. And I was like, oh, how the heck? I knew the higher power was working. And like, I left and I didn't come back, called my sponsor. My sponsor at the time, Mike, said, you have no reason to be in that relationship. You have no business there. You don't know who Mike is. You haven't done any stuff work. I mean, he gave me a riot act. Thank God. And I heard what he had to say, so I packed up all my trash bags and all my stuff that my kids had and moved it all out while she was at her home group, because I didn't know how any other way to leave without confrontation, and because I was very codependent. And so I went through all that, and I got a divorce from her, cut that short, so I ended up... working steps, I started finding out who Mike was, and so I got up to step seven again. Before I got to step seven, I got on step two, I left my sponsor's house. My sponsor, at the time when I left his house, he was doing some things that I didn't agree with, and I said, you know what, thank God he's there, but I don't know how to fire him, because, like, I love the guy. He saved me so many times in Narcotics Anonymous early on, and, so I left out of there, but a week later he called me. He had moved to North Carolina with a lady friend in the program and said, I'm going to stay down here and be a parent to her kids and be with her. And started telling me about all these suggestions for sponsors. And all I could think of was, wow, God, that was quick. Like, I'm going on my third step. So I ended up going to this men's retreat my buddy Jim had asked me to go to. And, so I went to this men's retreat in 1997, and I met my sponsor, who was going to be my next sponsor. It was Mark D. And I went there, and I asked him. So I saw something there was all these guys had a connection with a higher power that I did not have. And I could clearly see that, so I asked them. I said, how do I get that relationship like I see all these guys got? He said, look, all you got to do is ask God to reveal himself to you at the right time, when you get a chance alone, and ask him to reveal himself to you and his power and his might. And I said, okay, that sounded easy enough. So the next night I went out and I prayed and I asked God, you know, I don't know who what you are, but I need you in my life, and please reveal yourself to me. Boy, if be ready for that adventure if you're in that position, because every meeting I went to, some guy would come up and sit down to me and start talking to me about God. I would go to a meeting in Frederick, candlelight meeting in Frederick. Some guy I didn't know would sit up next to me and would start talking to me about God. The lawyer I had, he ended up having degrees in the ministry and all this stuff, and started talking to me about God while I'm trying to get a divorce from the second wife. And I was just like, wow, this is okay. So I started going to a Bible study at Mark's house at the time. And when I went there, I just told him, I said, look, I'm done. I surrender. Like, I asked God to come into my life and to take my will in my life and guide me in my recovery, basically. And so he did. So I just started following God everywhere, in the meetings. And I will say I went to church at the time and did a Bible study every week. So I started learning a lot of things that was new to me. And then fast forward, I started getting into another relationship with somebody, another program that I've known all my life. We went to elementary school together, and she's a wonderful woman. And I was getting ready to ask her to marry me, but something wasn't right, and I had to do like a fourth step on it. And it turned out that it wasn't the right thing. It was, the negatives outweighed the positives. And God jumped in the middle of it, and she kind of knew too at the same time. And like, so we split apart, and then I decided to be with nobody for the next 3 years. So I was celibate, and I didn't date anybody. I tried not to have sex with anybody, not to have sex with myself. It was very hard, but I did it. And I then ended up developing some women friends in the program that I hung with. I became a trusted, like a brother. So I became a trustworthy man in Narcotics Anonymous. And I can tell you, I never saw that coming. And so I ended up getting these relationships. And I had a friend who was coming to the meeting, and she was going through some stuff, and we would always talk, and she was married. But we ended up talking one night and figured out that we liked each other a whole lot. And So I had given my life to God, said, hey, you do whatever you got to do. But then once we started figuring out we liked each other, I kind of like started to take control again. By this time, I was on step 7 again, making a list. I didn't put myself on that list. I really didn't get that far because I started taking control. We moved in together and ended up using. And because I wasn't following God's plan, I was following Mike's plan. And I ended up using, and I got angry with God, and I mean, I was going to meet and everything. I left the meeting, and I went around the corner and picked some up and decided to do one because I didn't know how to deal with the feelings that were going on inside of me because I stopped doing all the work at the time because basically I had stopped talking to my sponsor. I had stopped talking to Mark. I kind of like pushed him to the side, and he would tell me, what are you doing? You're going to use if you keep following this route. And I would be like, no, I'm good. I'm okay. It was not okay. It was not good. And I ended up using. And it was horrible because it was during the Free State Convention and everybody knew I was using. And I'd went up Nextel phones and they would ding my Nextel. Where are you? We know where you're doing. And I couldn't stop it. Late at night, it was... I think it was late that Friday night. I'm on a long road in the middle of nowhere, and all I kept hearing, I thought, now I'm delusional now, because like I had spent all the money I had, which was a lot, to start smoking crack again, and I thought I saw somebody walking down the road. It wasn't nobody there. I knew it was nobody there. Like, there's absolutely nobody around where I was parked, and out in the country. And I kept hearing this voice talk to me, and it kept saying, Mike. And I was like, man, I am hallucinating now. And he kept saying, Mike, are you done doing it your way? And are you ready to start doing it my way? And I clearly knew who that was. That God that I gave my life to the first time around, he didn't back out of the deal. I did. I'm the one who backed out. And I heard that, and I went back to the apartment we shared, and I got on my knees, and I told her, she's my wife now, but we weren't married yet. And I told her, I said, I had 6 years clean. I was meetings every day, all the time, doing steps. So don't think you're immune to picking up. And it was devastating to me, to her, and my family. But I got on my knees and I told God, I said, I'll do whatever you want. I'll take it all. I don't care. Whatever you got to do with me. And so he decided to get me to have a different sponsor for a while. Ended up having Calvin as my sponsor, which was amazing because the first thing he had me do was do a Codependent No More book. And man, that probably saved my life because I started seeing how dependent my feelings and my actions were on what I perceived that you thought of me. I don't know if you can get that, but that's what I got. That's the biggest thing that I got out of it. And man, it changed my relationship with all kinds of things. And so after I came back, I only stayed out a few days. It was like, so it was 27, so I want to say 10 days later, my wife Carla comes to me, and we weren't married, and she says, how many pills you got left? Because my mom, my number one enabler, codependent person in my life, always had Tylenol 3s and gave me a bunch to come down with. And I said, I have like 2. She said, let's flush them and go get a white tea tag. I said, okay, let's do it. So we did. We went and got a white tea tag, flushed them, went and got a white tea tag. It was December 8th, 2003. And we've both been clean ever since. And I cleaned a share with my wife. So like so that was on December 8th. And on December 21st, we ended up getting married in our living room from our pastor friend who knew all about us and everything was going on. And my temporary sponsor before I had gotten Calvin was this guy Al, and her sponsor was Bonnie at the time, Al and Bonnie. And they were our witnesses and in the living room. And so like we just gave it all to God, and we started doing the meetings and working steps, and I got a new sponsor, Calvin, who had me do the Codependent No More. And other thing that I loved about him was that he was a different skin color than me, but he was exactly like me, and I was exactly like him. We just wanted people to love us. And I learned, because he had a lot more time than I did, and I learned so much from that man. So we worked up until I got to steps, back of your step 7, and our relationship started falling apart because his relationship had some issues that he was in, and he was night shift, I was day shift, so we broke apart, and I stayed there probably a year too long in that relationship, not being able to do work when I was ready to do work, until the point where I got a new sponsor who was Jerry. I asked Jerry D to be my sponsor at that men's retreat. So that men's retreat that I went to, I've been to it every year since 1997. And now I'm like involved in it. Like I help run it with Mark. And so this is just like ongoing. It's like, and I had to think about this. This is like a long time of recovery. And like I'm getting older in recovery. And so with time, I went through, got through the 12 steps with Jerry, and then he called me one day. He had 21 years clean and told me that he had used. And I didn't even waste 2 hours. I called his sponsor, who was Gary H., and he didn't answer, so I called Mark, and I said, Mark, can you temporarily sponsor me? And Mark, so you know 100% I will, because we still had we had healed our relationship from all that time. And his wife Cindy started laughing and said, yeah, it's not going to be temporary. And she was 100% correct. And it's blossomed. And I've done step work with Mark, and we're man, it's God has brought us back together. And like we talk to each other a couple times a week, and it's like, so the guy that I used to put up on a pedestal of all the clean time in NA, and he was the greatest, is now like he's like one of my best friends. And I don't see him that way anymore. Like, God cleared all that mess out. Like, he straightened it all out and said, you know, he's just another recovering addict like you. So we pray with each other all the time. He shared the Narnot meeting a little while ago, and we prayed together before that for each other. Like, Narcotics Anonymous has changed my life. And so many other things that came along with that. So, like, I also have this lawn care business that used to be my parents', it was my father's business, and like I would take the truck and disappear all over Baltimore for weeks at a time. Could never find me. The police could never find me. And here I am. I own the business today. Like, I run the business, and it's amazing. I can't even believe where I'm at. So I lost my, you know, we're talking about loss. I lost my mom in 2009. She had dementia, and she had all these other crazy things. And I was, she wasn't even my mom anymore. She was just a different person. And I was like, whenever she saw me, because our relationship was very codependent. We didn't know how to talk to each other except for scream and yell at the end, even when I was in recovery, because I didn't know that she needed recovery too. And I didn't know that she was still on a bunch of medications up until the end, and still drinking. She loved her Miller Lite. And, you know, so she ended up passing. And I had made my amends with my mom. She had got, for some reason, you know, God made a way. Like, I went to, like, I had made amends with her before, because I had gotten clean and the first time. But the, you know, after I came back, like, I went to go see her, and like, she cleared up and was like my mom for like 5 minutes, and knew who I was, and we talked for 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden it all disappeared and went away, and then I was like this son of a, you know, and I was just like thanking God that I was able to do that. And so my father, who lived on, and he just, my father hadn't really gotten into that, but he passed away last week. He would have been 95. I made my amends with him, and he told me, he said, son, he said, you've done what I couldn't do with the business. So, I guess I've been holding it in, because I had a talk with him. I knew he was okay. And he knew I was okay. We'd made amends so many times. We talked so many times. And I knew he was ready to go. So it's been a rough couple weeks here. Like, I run a business, plow snow. So when that storm came, I worked ungodly amount of hours. It was very hard work, and I'm not a young man like I was before, and I also like to hunt. So a couple weeks before that, I was hunting, and I was getting out of my tree stand, and I slipped on the stand and fell and landed on this big branch. It was an old branch that's been laying there for who knows how long. It was very hard. Okay, and it put a bruise on me, so I went through all that while I'm hurting, my father going into hospice and passing, and then my stepson rolled my wife's car. And so all that within like a 3-week span, and guess what? I'm still here. The thing that I knew to do was to come to the meeting. Like, when stuff happens in my life, I go to the meeting. That's what I learned in Narcotics Anonymous, because I know they're going to help me put my ass back on. So that's all I've got to share. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Mr. Mike. Hey. I would like to thank Ms. Ellen and Mr. Mike for sharing a great meeting. As a reminder, the free entertainment for tonight, Saturday night, comedy show in the Fitzgerald Ballroom starts at 10 p.m. Don't forget to visit the merchandise, hospitality, and grab a coffee from the coffee station at cost. Can we please close the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Come on!
James, where's James?
You need another